Welcome to the Cat Attack Podcast. Thanks to Kurz Hire. No Ben Castanilia. He is bintanging in Bali. But we have been lucky enough to get the man that we love to call .com in the K-Rock commentary box to join us on the Cat Attack Podcast from The Age, Pete Ryan. Pete, welcome to this wonderful, fun bit of radio that we do every week.
It's fantastic to be here, actually. I reckon that I've drawn the short straw, not only replacing Ben, who's obviously one of the major on-air talents, but a Geelong loss. Disappointing.
Usually Ben's opening up with, you know, it's the 11-1 Cat Attack podcast, but it's now the 12-3, and we're not as high on the world. Gee, that was just, it was unwatchable at times on Saturday night.
It was strange, wasn't it? There was no excuse. There was no kind of post-bye, doldrums or anything like that. They just couldn't hit a target. And for the first three quarters, it was frustrating because you felt like Geelong had the game in their keeping if they were able to convert or to make the most of their opportunities. But the Bulldogs just hung in there as they do. They got a goal right on the siren at half time, which gave them a little bit of hope, and then they just overwhelmed Geelong with their pressure and their ball use in the final quarter. And it was disappointing from Geelong. No need to panic, but you would have thought you'd bank the 4 points and move on.
The issue they've got now is that they've just opened the door slightly for West Coast to take top spot. Now, there's not much difference between one and two other than potentially maybe the breaks that you get through the final series. But the Cats run home's not easy, considering a couple of results over the weekend. So they're no guarantee to finish on top now.
Well, there is no easy game, as you know. But they should bounce back this week against St Kilda. I think they're three games clear and percentage still in the top four, which is probably your number one objective at the start of the season when you get up and running. But once you're in a position that they were at the bye, you'd want to finish top two without a doubt and get at least a home final, whether that's at GMHBA or the MCG.
Where do you sit on that?
I must admit I'm conflicted. I'd like to see, I think from an integrity point of view, I think they deserve a final at GMHBA Stadium if they win their way to get that right, particularly given that the Giants play at what's now called Giants Stadium, which makes the argument a whole lot different, I reckon, than it maybe was previously. But it's hard as a footy fan to actually reconcile the fact that there might be, say, 20 or 30,000 fans locked out of a game or unable to come and see a big final if it's not played in Melbourne. So I know that's sitting on the fence, but I reckon if the opposition's right, GWS and even perhaps Brisbane, then play at GMHBA Stadium and get 40,000, get a great atmosphere.
If you're a Geelong member, what would you, and you knew that you were no guarantee of a ticket to a qualifying final at GMHBA Stadium, how do you look at it?
Well, you'd want to get guaranteed entry. I'd say that'd be my position.
So you have it at the G.
Yeah. What about you, Tom?
Well, it's quite interesting. Well, I want what is best for the footy club in terms of their best chance. Geelong are unbeaten at the MCG this year.
They're unbeaten at the MCG, and that's where the big one's going to be played, isn't it? Yep. So I mean, really, if they're good enough, they can win at the MCG. There is something that's if the crowd was going to be 40,000 at GMHBA Stadium, a packed stand, barracking for Geelong, there's something magnificent about that.
Yeah,
the town being a buzz and all those things.
I'll squeeze probably 35 in tops, I reckon. It'd be massive. And it was when the Fremantle game was here in 2013. The vibe around Geelong that day, the morning being around town, you just felt that there was a crescendo about to build. Unfortunately, it was pulled apart by Fremantle and it didn't go to plan, but you just got that feeling that there was something.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a buzz about town. It's like the night, the morning before the Australian Open final or something when you're in Melbourne. Yeah. But I reckon the other thing is Geelong has to push for a home final because of all the money that's been spent on that stadium and the way that they've actually developed into a great stadium.
Yep.
They'd be silly not to push hard.
I reckon if stage five had been done, and it was holding 40, I don't think we'd be actually having this discussion. They would just get that first final.
I think that's right.
They wouldn't get the prelim, but I definitely think they'd get the home qualifying final. So in 3 years' time, when that's all done, this will be a moot argument.
Yep.
I think we'll...
Do you suggesting that Geelong won't be in the finals?
No. You never know with Geelong.
No, you almost do.
They're going to be there.
Yeah.
The other thing is, too, is the lack of certainty from the AFL. Like, they haven't put any parameters around this?
No, because they want to suit themselves when the time arrives. So they, want, because of different motivations, to play the Giants at Giants Stadium, which is about expanding the game and making sure that the Giants are well and truly looked after. Geelong, they probably take for granted a little bit more, and they don't want to upset their Melbourne-based constituency, for the want of a too long a word on a Monday morning. that's where it sits. I mean, they're just going to sit on their hands, and if it happened to suit them and Geelong were drawn to play GWS in a qualifying final, hey presto, here you go.
Back to Saturday night's game, the clanger count. Geelong made 64 clangers for the game. And guys that don't usually make mistakes, Mitch Duncan, I'm looking at you, made them.
Yeah, well, Mitch Duncan has, I must admit, watching the game there on Saturday night, and he made a few of those, well, we will say uncharacteristic errors, but he's not, you know, he's not without possibility of making a clanger, because he does go for some risky kicks. Mm. And some of his kickouts were ordinary. Mark O'Connor also, unfortunately, had a bit of a patch there in the third quarter where he just kept turning the ball
and
over.
And the ball kept following him.
Yeah, and he lost confidence, I think, which is always, you know, a tough place for a player to be, particularly when you're kicking out of the back half. And I think we'll touch on this, but Geelong didn't have the tall target that they might use as a get-out kick, with Asava Radigalea sitting in the grandstands, and it's a player that is becoming increasingly vital, despite the fact he's only played, what, less than 20 games, to their structure.
Why wouldn't they have brought them in potentially at... Well, Fort didn't play at VFL level on the weekend. He hasn't played the last couple of weekends. My understanding is they're giving him a bit of a break to just get his... You know, he's a big body, getting used to AFL footy. Would you have just tried a buzzer? Just something to, you know, put it on somebody's head and bring the footy to ground?
Yeah, well, they should have, in hindsight, but I think they were a bit stiff in that Jake Colajasny got injured, which meant that their original plan, and people don't like Jack Henry playing forward. I know there's a lot of debate around that, but that was the plan, play Jack Henry forward, and he is a marking target. They had to swing him back once Jake Colajasny was off with concussion, and they just couldn't get any rhythm from that point on.
It was a cracking mark by Jordan Clark.
It was a great mark. I worked out last night, and this is a sad reflection on my life, but I watched three games live, Tom, on the weekend. Collingwood, Hawthorn, Geelong Bulldogs, and yesterday Carlton Melbourne. Mm. And I saw 580 marks taken. Jordan Clark's the only one I could remember.
Yeah.
It just shows the way the game is being played at the moment. It concerns me a little bit that it's just around the mulberry bush.
Yeah. Teams are too scared to make mistakes.
Absolutely.
And why have we got to that, though?
Well, they've realised that score on turnover is the main score source, and if you can defend scores on turnover, then you're a chance to keep the other opposition to a low score. So they just keep it, play a game of safety in the back half and keepings off, and it's what the West Coast Eagles did on the way to a premiership last year. Other clubs have adopted it, hanging the game, particularly if the Bulldogs or you're playing a tougher team. So the Bulldogs, for instance, didn't want to get caught up in a shootout with Geelong because they would have got blown off the park. So they just hung in there, and then went bang in the last quarter and evened up numbers up forward, and away they went.
Scott Selwood's played now the best part of 10 games in the VFL. Surely now, for two reasons. Geelong need a Scott Selwood, I think, in the side. But he's got to be given an opportunity to prove that he's worthy of another contract next year.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think they need him. I mean, you look at Bont on Saturday night was influential. I mean, he made a few mistakes, but he's a superstar of the game. If you had someone such as Scott Selwood to just go and cool him, as they say, for 5 minutes, 10 minutes, and just allow the other midfielders to get going, that would have been a real bonus for Geelong.
Yeah. Is Tom Atkins' value at the moment worthy of keeping his spot in the side?
Well, I was thinking that this morning. What do you reckon? I know you're a big fan of Tom, and
massive
obviously
fan,
you know him well.
But you know, only the 12 disposals, he only laid the two tackles, he didn't hit the scoreboard. And I know he's not there to hit the scoreboard, it's about pressure acts, but unfortunately he just didn't make the pressure acts that he's noted for. He's actually had no one percenters for the night, which would be the first time he wouldn't have had a one percenter in a game. Two tackles is low for him. The game style didn't suit him.
No.
Because of that lack of the ball going in the air, looking for the marking target, hitting the ground, and that's where he does his best work. Does that mean that he gets a bit of a reprieve in that regard, or do they need to look at Parsons' form as being...
Yeah, Parsons has to get a chance. I know Geelong supporters can sometimes, you know, dip their head in a bucket when they think of James Parsons and start bubbling and worrying, but he was clearly best on ground against Box Hill on the weekend, and he would allow them to give Tom Atkins a bit of a break. I mean, I don't think Tom's played quite as well since he got that minor injury. He was only out for a week, I think. But he hasn't bounced back from that. And the extra thing, which, you know, some people believe in and some don't, but if you haven't got, you know, he's playing his first season of AFL football. He's played every JLT game, and then he's missed one game through injury, I think it is. So mentally, that can start to get a bit tiring. He might just need to freshen up.
Yeah, bring him back. No game's a gimme, but the Cats beat St Kilda on Saturday night.
You're playing full forward on Saturday night. You're going to be the structure up there.
But then the following week,
yeah,
it's Hawthorn, and then it's off to Sydney, then it's off to Perth. So maybe this is the game where they go, all right, who of these guys can we maybe give a rest to? Who can we try?
That's true.
Against a weaker opposition, and I use weaker in inverted commas, is it maybe, this is Parsons, this is Scott Selwood, this may be Zach Smith.
Yep, they have to play Scott Selwood. There's no doubt about that. I'm not sure who goes out. I mean, the other thing is, O'Connor looks to me like we spoke about his little poor patch, but he looks to me a little bit off the boil as well. Might benefit from a bit of a break, particularly now that Zach Tui's back.
For some, it might just take going back to the VFL and just getting your confidence back. Go back and maybe play a little bit freer, get hold of it 30 times and be right to go again.
Yeah, well, it's the middle of July. You're on top of the ladder. You're flying. You've come back after the bye. You've had a couple of days in Queensland or something, and you start to, you know, put on the old reef oil and life seems pretty good. And then all of a sudden you're back in cold Geelong and you're trying to get out of bed and keep playing. It can just take the edge off you. Mm. So you're probably, it's something they really have to consider.
Yep. Parfitt straight back?
Yeah, I think so. And Chris Scott seemed to indicate that after the match. It was interesting, actually, just one for you, Tom, because you know, I know you questioned Matthew Knights on the night about why they didn't name Gary Rowan in the side. Their thinking was, or they're under the rules, they had to, they wanted Brandon Parfitt to be a carryover.
Yep.
In case Gary Rowan or another player injured themselves in the warm-up. So under the rules, if they'd actually put Parfitt out of the side and given a reason, as in managed, they couldn't then, which means he gets his match payments and so on, they couldn't then have him as a carryover emergency.
Okay.
Which meant that they had to, according to them, name Parfitt.
So they can't drop him.
Correct.
Yep.
They can't drop him under the rules as they stand, and they can't drop him. If they dropped him, then he doesn't get his match payments. So, or he doesn't somehow fit under that injury list, injury payment model that is part of the TPP, and it's complicated, and I won't go into it because I don't really understand it, but that's the reason why.
And you would say, well, why don't you just come out on Thursday night and say, this is what's going to happen?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's true. But then why do that if you don't have to?
Yeah, and they're not obliged to.
No.
I think it's just, I like to sometimes put myself in the seat of a supporter.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, no, I agree that you think, you go to the game, you're expecting, Parfitt might be, I mean, this is no disrespect to Brandon Parfitt, but he's not exactly going to drag people through the gates.
No.
But say it was Dangerfield or Selwood or your 10-year-old's favourite player is Brandon Parfitt, and you travel down the highway to watch him play, and all of a sudden he's laid out. That's one person who's less enthusiastic about the game than they would have been.
Or the hardcore fan who's gone out to Box Hill thinking they're going to watch Gary Rowan play.
True.
And gone, well, hang on, Geelong City was playing in the VFL.
Yeah, the hardcore fan that goes out to Box Hill to watch Gary Rowan play needs to have a bit of a think about that.
Do you know what? There were some hardcore fans at Box Hill. Like they,
it's great. I watched it on video. It's fantastic.
They flocked out there knowing that they could get there, watch that, and had plenty of time to get back from
Box
Hill to Marvel Stadium. Look, they're a hearty bunch, the Geelong VFL.
I love going to the VFL on a Saturday Arvo and then backing up with the Saturday night game. I did it on Saturday, dropped into Werribee to watch Collingwood Werribee just to see what was on offer for the Pies, and it's a great way to spend your Saturday.
Who's coming out of the Pies twos next week?
Everyone.
You got some
swap the side.
we know
not many, but there is John Noble, who's a chance, who's only a mid-season draft pickup who might come in. That's how desperate they're getting.
So the Cats, St Kilda yesterday, slow start, were competitive after quarter time. Will Alan Richardson still be coach on Saturday night?
I'd say he'll definitely be coach.
He'll coach the year out, won't he?
I would say that's more likely than not, although,
do you get to a tipping point where you go, do you know what? There is absolutely no point in us sacking a bloke now. We might as well just keep him to round 22 or round 23 and then we make our move.
Not if it's everyone knows what's happening, and it starts to affect the playing group and his ability to do his job and communicate and all those sorts of things. Excuse me, there's a couple of things with Alan Richardson. One is that he has a trigger clause that means he'll be recontracted if they win a final. So until they're mathematically out of any calculations of making the finals, then they can't actually sack him without having to pay him out for next year. So that holds up their decision. And they also have a couple of other matters, like their president's away overseas for a bit. So there's all those practical things. So I reckon that he'll probably...
What does he get to, around 20 or something?
Something like that, unless they make some dramatic recovery. But yeah, that'd be my... if I had to put money on it, my tip at the moment, but that's not coming from any particular, intel from inside the club. That's just the reality of the situation.
All right. As you would know, listening to the Cat Attack podcast, we do take some questions from our listeners. We hit big footy. Foxdog50 is a regular. Wondering if you'd heard any rumours of who we may be interested in trade period week, e.g. free trade, non-free trades. You don't have to say who told you, just some names we could be after. Well, Steve Canelio's name's obviously... Yep. I think Geelong are interested.
Yep.
It's probably unlikely.
Yeah, probably unlikely, and less interested than they may have been previously, not because of any drop-off of him, but they probably realise that their chances of actually landing him are not as, not as high as, say, Hawthorn, if he does. The word is that he'd stick around. Tim Kelly holds the key to a lot of trades, so his decision of whether he stays or goes makes... a big difference to what Geelong's thinking is. And obviously Jeremy Cameron keeps being mentioned as a possibility. He's still got a year to run on his contract, but he could be an interesting one to watch.
Was it posturing from the Cats last week when they said that Kelly's a bit more comfortable this year and feels a bit more at home in Geelong? Or is it legitimate and they are confident that he'll be at least another year in Geelong?
I think there's two elements to it. I think it's legitimate that he's feeling comfortable at Geelong, and everything that they said was true in that respect. But to say that they're confident of keeping him, I would say that would be a little bit of a stretch. I'd say most people think that he's still a very strong chance to request a trade at the end of the season, and it'd be a matter of working out now exactly what's available, A, what they get for him, which is rising by the minute, really, and B, how they go about those negotiations in terms of who they might bring in as a replacement.
Brad Hill's the interesting one in all of this now, isn't he? But he's more likely to go back to Hawthorn or find his way back to Hawthorn.
I wouldn't say so, no. No, I don't think he'll be at Geelong, but I don't think he'll be at Hawthorn.
Okay.
I'd say that it's one of those clubs, if he leaves Fremantle, which he may not, it'd be one of those clubs with a fair bit of cash to spend, which is North Melbourne, St Kilda.
The Dogs.
Those sorts of clubs are the ones that have some room in their salary cap and might be interested in a player with some outside run, such as Brad Hill.
Marvel Stadium would suit Brad Hill.
Oh, it'd be unbelievable, actually. I mean, he's a three-time premiership player and he can play. And he's only 25. I mean, I think Hawthorn's done what Collingwood maybe should have done with Dane Beams and said, hang on, mate, you left. Not sure that we've got a spot for you here. But other clubs are probably more interested.
Okay. We'll keep an eye on Sam Jacobs to Geelong.
I checked that out, and there's certainly Geelong haven't spoken to his manager about it. Yep. And there's some people at Geelong who would be interested in it. I'm sure Paddy Dangerfield would love to see him there because they're obviously great mates and played together in a lot of respect. But if he did come, which I don't think is in the works at the moment, then it'd be one of those ones right at the end of the trade period or free agency period.
Okay. Paddy Ryder, what's going to happen there?
Yeah, well, that's an interesting one. He's after 2 years at Port Adelaide, and Port Adelaide won't offer him more than one.
Would Essendon give him two to come back?
I'm not sure about that. They'll be in the market for a ruckman. They might. And Geelong, obviously, are going... Well, not obviously in the market for a ruckman, but Zach Smith's out of contract. You'd think they'd want another ruckman at some point in the trade period.
All right. Foxdog 50 also. I know you love the guys, love the potential of a sub, but why wouldn't you give Wiley Buzzer a shot the last 2 weeks? The only way to see what he's got is to give him a couple of games in a row, plus it would have given Stanley a help out in the ruck instead of playing a best key defender blitz in the ruck. Well, yeah, I did raise Buzzer's name a little bit earlier. He's out of contract, Wiley Buzzer. So
yeah.
I think Geelong are a fairly fair football club. If you are coming towards the end of a contract... And they're weighing up. They will give you a look.
Yeah, absolutely.
They're not. Yeah, it's only if you've been battling a lot. Like they've had some kids that just they knew early weren't just going to get there. And so, you know, Ryan Gardner never got a chance. Tim House never got a chance. And in recent years, Matty Hayball. But Buzz has played a little bit.
He's played well in the VFL.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he's played some really good games against Collingwood. He kicked five, and he's played all right on the weekend.
I think you've got to judge, don't you, how well they play against the AFL-aligned teams.
Yep.
The strongly AFL-aligned teams.
Yep.
And probably Williamstown are probably the next best in that regard.
Absolutely.
You know, if you're kicking a hatful of goal against Frankston or Coburg.
Yeah. No, I agree. It's money for jam against those teams. No disrespect, because they're great clubs. But I think, Buzzer probably seems a little bit off AFL class based on what we've seen, but he does deserve an opportunity if Radicalea is not in the team.
Turbo Cat, another week of close but aesthetically poor footy under a roof, dry ground. We sit on top, two games clearing it. The Dogs-Cats game was another puker derby where the lack of scoring is enough to make someone sick to their stomach. Why should anyone pay to watch the score drought style? Would you pay if it was not your job to attend? I think the AFL is very lucky there are so many locked-in fans. So it's really funny. I haven't paid to watch a game of footy in a heck of a long time. I'm an MCC member, so when I go to the G as a footy fan, I flash my card and then I go. But I don't know how many games I'd go to if I was just a football follower.
No, well, I mean, I paid. The family, a couple of members of the family went to the Friday night game and we paid $35 or something, 27 for an adult and $5 for the kids.
Still good value.
It's great value, but it's not great value if you're sitting there on a Friday night and it's boring.
Mm.
It's like, where would you rather be, sitting at home or at the movies or something like that?
Yeah.
They've got to do something about the style of play. I don't know what they do, but it has become such a... There are some very ordinary games of football at the moment. And if you are paying, you are entitled to think, have I got better alternatives?
Yep.
I love the footy, you love the footy, and probably obviously million people in Victoria do, so they'll keep turning up.
Yep.
But there's an increasing dissatisfaction with some of the style of play.
There's still 180,000 people attended the three games at the G on the weekend.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it?
65 Friday night, 60 on Saturday. For Essendon, Sydney.
Yeah.
Yep. On a Saturday arvo.
Yeah.
And then 55 yesterday for Carlton and Melbourne, which was 16th versus 17th.
Yeah. And that crowd at the end in the last quarter was fantastic. They were going berserk and they would have had a great time at the footy.
And it was a big Carlton. That would have been 40,000 Carlton fans there yesterday.
I shudder to think what it's going to be like when Carlton are good.
Yeah.
Because the crowds are desperate and fanatic and they're loud.
Yep. The AFL are just dying for the day where Essendon, Carlton, Richmond and Collingwood fill the top four spots on the ladder. There will not be a ground big enough in the world.
No,
you could play it at the Maracana in Rio and you still would have enough seats.
What could they do about the scoring, Kingy? I mean, 7 goals for the Cats is not what they want to be doing.
No. It's interesting. Turbo Cat asks, if the scoring continues to drop, what change do you think will be looked at to try and increase it? Well, on a holistic AFL view, how can they? The coaches find a way.
Yeah.
They bring in rules and the coaches find a way. The players are too fit.
That struck me the other night.
If you can say something about it, the players are too fit.
Yeah.
They are because they...
Which, if you follow that logically, then interchange becomes the mechanism to try and tie them out.
Yeah, have less.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then Matty Scarlett suggested...
I heard that, yeah.
...that maybe we go to more rotations because then the players are more likely to not tire, use the footy better.
Yeah, attack the game.
Attack the game more.
Yep.
So I think there's too many on the bench.
Yeah, it's interesting.
We played for a long time with no interchange.
Yep.
With just reserves.
Yep.
And then we went to only two on the bench. When was footy at its best?
Yeah, two on the bench.
Two or three on the bench.
Yep.
80s and 90s.
Yep,
that's
absolutely.
And look, maybe we look at that era through rose-coloured glasses, but we just found that era where some players was just starting to go professional and full-time. But you still had, you know, Tim McGrath retired in 2002. He was still on the tools.
Yeah, no, I know.
So
the scoring then was unbelievable.
Yeah.
When you look at the old scores, ridiculous how many goals.
You look at the 89 grand final, 144 beat 138.
That's right. And it was about 8-3 and they were still in it at quarter time or something, weren't they? Yeah.
Whereas now, if you get like yesterday, two teams scoring 100.
Yeah, I know. It was a miracle.
Yeah.
We all fainted.
You go, what the hell's going on?
Funnily enough, Carlton scored 100 twice under David Teagan, lost both of them. No, the other option that the footy manager spoke about a couple of weeks ago is that they have a couple of players that have to be positioned in the opposite 50 if there's a stoppage up one end of the ground, if that makes sense,
yeah, but
to stretch the game. Yeah, but that would make it hard from it. It becomes like netball, not in the, but, you know, in that zone. People hate it.
The NAB League, as it is now, play still are playing anti-density, but I think that's more because, although the issue is, recruiters want to see players at their best, and that's why those anti-density rules come in. But the problem is, you get them into the system, and then you change them into what you want.
I know. Yeah, I mean,
they become robots.
Just watching players chip around 10, 15 metre kicks, you know, and occasionally ump calls play on one, and then the game just goes into, it's like multi-ball at pinball, you know, everyone just goes ballistic for a second, and the game fires up.
And then raises their hands to settle it down.
Yeah, exactly. I love the way you're doing that on podcast.
Nobody can see it.
That's brilliant, Kingy.
The one rule I would bring in is kick backwards at the play on.
Yep.
And the other...
How would you measure that, though? Have line judges soccer?
Well, no.
Or just use your judgment?
You've got to use your judgment. Yeah. What's the ground cut into? They're about 10-metre segments where it's light and dark.
Yeah.
Surely that can give you a good reference of what it is. You know, if it's lateral, you're right.
Yep.
Anything back of...
Kane Johnson wouldn't like that rule.
No, he liked the kick backwards. That's one. And the VFL... when it was still sort of independent of the AFL, had the line across the ground for a couple of seasons where any kick in the back half of the ground that went backwards was... Maybe it's got to be back half of the ground.
Yeah, I reckon you're onto something with less players. Perhaps 16 and 2 on the bench.
Yeah. Sheeds came... We had Sheeds on an Anzac Day about 4 or 5 years ago, and he was onto this. He said... VFA, 16 players.
Yeah.
16. I'd keep the 18.
After Saturday night, I reckon you could get rid of 6 out of the Cats team. Straight away. Line through them as you left the ground.
Who's going out? So what change are they making? Is it Selwood, Radigalia, Parsons, Parfitt? They can make 4 changes this week?
Ooh, 4 would be a big stretch, wouldn't it?
For a side that's been so settled.
Yeah, yes. You'd think that, say Radigalia comes in. So
there's going to be definitely one change. You would think the Colajasny, Cats take no risk with
that's correct.
Concussion.
So Colajasny goes out, Radigalia comes in, Henry goes back and plays in that defensive position. Selwood comes in, and that puts Cam Guthrie under a little bit of pressure, perhaps. Lockie Fogarty.
Parfitt puts Atkins under pressure.
Parfitt puts Atkins under pressure, absolutely. That'd be the 3 I'd make. I'm not sure I'd put Parsons straight back in the team. But, you know... look, that'd be my 3.
It's going to be interesting. Pete, hey, we really appreciate you filling in.
It's been great.
Taking the,
I haven't got Ben's one-liners, but they're pretty hard to replicate, aren't they?
Do you know what the good thing about you coming in is? I don't have to go back and listen back and go, what do I need to actually take out
to put this
into the podcast world? Because it's always something every week that Ben comes up with.
I can imagine. God love him.
Good stuff, Pete. Look forward. Will you be joining us in the K-Rock box Saturday
night?
Well,
funnily enough, I'm joining Ben and having a bit of a mid-season break. So I won't be there on Saturday night. I'm heading off to Birdsville to see Midnight Oil.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Priorities, hey?
Absolutely. Good to see them back playing. And
one and only show for 2019.
So where you got to fly to for that?
Brisbane, 15-hour bus ride to Birdsville and set up camp for 3 days.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, so it'll be fun and I'll be tuning into K-Rock on Saturday night as I make my way there.
Good stuff, Pete. Enjoy that and look forward to seeing you back in the K-Rock box soon.
Thanks.
Pete Ryan from The Age joining us on the Cat Attack podcast. Thanks to Kerr's Hire and K-Rock Footy from 6 o'clock on Saturday night. The Cats and the Saints and the Tigers and the Giants, a cracker at the MCG from midday on Sunday afternoon.
Kerr's Hire, Geelong's official Wacker Noisome dealer. North Geelong, Grovedale and Ocean Grove. Kerr'sHire.com.au.
Thanks for listening. You can subscribe to the Cat Attack podcast on iTunes.